This is an 8-iron, and it's a dead shank.
Wow.
Way right.
Oh, takes a hop shank off the path.
You gotta be kidding me.
Very tough pitch shot right here. You gotta hit it into the hill. One hop up and bite, and it's in.
Kind of like that!
Well, I would like to welcome recognized Golf Digest top teachers, friend of the brand, a friend of mine, and having Kyle Alderink on the Sub 70 podcast is an honor for the second time. Pro, thanks for doing it. Great time, I think, for us to talk since kind of even like for the whole nation, right? Like golf season post-Masters is upon us, and this is, I think, always the time of the year where we're like, okay, how can we get better? And then that is where you come in. So this should be perfect of having your wisdom and your expertise to all help us play a little bit better this year.
Well, thank you. And yeah, I mean, it's always great to talk with you guys. And yeah, I mean, this is, you know, golf's just been going crazy for a while. I mean, you know that better than anybody. But yeah, I mean, I think everybody's itching to get out. And yeah, so this will be fun.
I was going to talk to you about the Masters and the kind of run Scottie Scheffler's on, and just kind of from your lens of, you know, because I know you do the mental side, you do the swing side. You're trying to make golfers the best they can be on the golf course and on top of mechanics and process and all that. But golf swing, right? Like, and you're seeing more of this where it's like the Adam Scott footwork, the traditional way of doing it. Bubba kind of started it, but it's not your traditional kind of golf swing, right? It's working. I wouldn't change anything. But, you know, what do you see in Scottie's swing? And then we'll get in the mental side of what you're seeing with him a little bit. But what are you seeing in the swing of why he's such a great ball striker?
I mean, you know, outside of the swing, honestly, I mean, I think confidence plays just a tremendous role in what you're doing. I mean, and, you know, people might roll their eyes at that. But, like, look, I mean, somebody who's not very confident can have the best swing in the world, and it's probably not going to play that well. And somebody who doesn't have maybe the best swing, I'm not saying he doesn't, but is extremely confident, is usually going to perform pretty well. And, you know, the one thing I love about players like that, that I'm always fascinated with is, you know, I'm sure somebody along the way tried to get into the ear and say, like, look, you got to change that. You know, the long debate with like Jim Furyk, you know, same thing. I mean, you know, people come along with ideas and things, and then guys like this come and blow it out of the water. I mean, like, you know, David Duval was number one in the world and, you know, basically turned his head to the target. So, you know, people hated that. So, like, when stuff comes around like that, I love that. And I think it just proves, like, there's not just one way to do it, and it's not what something looks like. And, I mean, it's not an easy move to replicate. I'm sure everybody's been out there and has tried to, you know, slide the foot and have that kind of funky footwork and just to see what it's like. And it's, I mean, it's not the most comfortable thing, at least when I try it. But, you know, I'm that person, like, that's interesting. Let's try this. Let's test it. And so, I mean, you know, in terms of the swing stuff too, I mean, the guy just has incredible club face control, which it all really boils back down to, right? I mean, he knows what shot he wants to hit. He's very confident of that. And he can control the club face regardless of, you know, what his feet are doing. So I don't know if that's the answer you're looking for, but I mean, to me, it's like, I love seeing kind of more of the untraditional stuff. And I love to see a breakout like that, because I think it helps this game evolve and say, like, look, like, it doesn't need to look a certain way. And I think a lot of junior golfers get trapped up in that. I know I've had a lot of conversations with people along the way of, you know, they might be doing something a little untraditional and playing very, very well. And I remember even just kind of a short story, like a long time ago, this player is extremely, extremely good. I mean, nationally ranked, and she had a very untraditional golf swing. It was kind of shut inside, but I mean, this girl could control the face, hit it where she wanted to, and score like crazy. And it's like, gosh, don't let anybody change that. Like, I kept pleading with her. I was like, don't let anybody change that. And she let people change it and ended up struggling. But, you know, it's just one of those things, like, it's, you know, sometimes you can swing your own swing, but there's a fine line where, you know, you might be doing something, the average golfer might be doing something like that, hitting it awful. So it's like, you know, as a coach, you're always looking at, you know, when do you need to make changes and when do you just kind of nurture something like that? And Scottie, I think, is doing a great job of just being like, look, this is what I do. And, you know, I don't know too many other people are going to do it like that.
Don't you think, too, it's kind of playing into the modern power game with that foot? Like, if you looked at long drive guys even 10 years ago, their footwork kind of did that to just clear leverage all of it of hitting it hard, right? And then, like I said, Bubba comes along. It's different. You know who else used to do it back in the day? Cal Kavecchia. You know, he hit the shit out of it in the day, hitting a power fade, kind of like Scotty's preferred ball flight. And his right foot kind of, you know, did the same sort of thing. So there's been guys who are doing it. But I wonder, too, is it just changing from just be an athlete? Like, you know, be athletic. You know, I'm not athletic enough to make that move, right? Like, and I was always taught, like, at a young age, but, you know, we didn't swing that hard at it in 19, I'm going to date myself, 84, 85, right? The ball spun too much, so you had quiet footwork, a nice little turn, right? Now these guys are just getting up there and just whacking the shit out of it, and the math proves that's the right way to do it. So is it also, do you think it's just, I guess my question is, being better athletes, and, like, who cares how it looks? If you can control the face through the zone, which he does a wonderful job, hit that thing hard, you know, and let them go where they go.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I mean, you as an equipment guy could agree too. I think equipment plays a good role on it where you can go after a little harder without it, you know, fear of going different directions. But, you know, I also think information is the biggest thing that's changed too. I mean, you know, in the 80s, 90s, and, you know, when I was coming up as a junior golfer or a competitive golfer, I mean, we didn't have this information. I mean, we didn't have you know, pressure plates and things like that to measure that stuff. It was all just, hey, this guy does it like this. And, you know, you try to essentially try to copy that. But, you know, it just goes to show, like, you know, swings and theories and things can evolve along the way. But, you know, from what we know now and you know, kind of something I've always just, this has always made sense to me is just, you know, really being kind of lighter on the feet and pushing off the balls of the feet and creating that kind of athletic move. I mean, no different than how a pitcher's going to throw, right? They're going to land on the foot and they're going to push off and you're going to see the foot kind of drive. You know, I think there's a lot of that. I think we definitely know now that, you know, the feet being stuck in the ground is not great for everybody.
Right.
Or not great for a lot of people, you know, especially as you're trying to get more distance and being there. And again, in terms of the athlete, you know, I don't know if I'd agree with that. I mean, I think the players back in the day were probably just as good athletes. They just didn't know as much. You know, they didn't really know what to be working on in sense. And, you know, I mean, I think Tiger definitely changed the game, too, when it came to working out and stuff like that. But, I mean, I think the golfers of all the, you know, older days, you know, I think, like, Jack Nicklaus, I think, was a hell of an athlete.
Yeah.
No, Arnold Palmer was probably a hell of an athlete, you know what I mean?
But you couldn't do that with the older – the ball would just spin too much. I mean, there was a few guys. Arnold hit it hard. Norman hit it hard. But there's a lot of guys who look like they were – if you watch a – you know, an Open championship from 1986. Like, Norman's the only one. There's very few that look like they're swinging as hard as Norman, right? Because I think the mishit was so punished that you couldn't use your athleticism like you can now. I guess that's more what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you 100%. That's what I mean. I was saying just a minute ago about, like, the equipment made such a big difference.
And the ball.
Right?
The ball, especially.
The ball. My goodness, I know. I mean, it's like, I mean, dude, I hit it 300 still. You know, in my 40s. And I mean, I was hitting it maybe my best 260 in college with a Callaway steelhead driver.
I'm longer at 51. You know, there's no question, right? I'm longer at 51 than I was at 21.
Yeah. And I mean, I can get up there and just kind of swing as hard as I want. And the ball's pretty much staying on the planet.
Right. And that's what's
just
changed.
It's different.
Yes.
Yeah. So I think that's definitely evolved in how players can swing and being able to get into that power stuff. Because like you said, I mean, back, you know, in my earlier days, if I would have done that, I mean, I still have haunting memories of snap hooks.
Oh,
and
me too.
You know, stuff like that, especially under pressure. I mean, I remember a couple tournaments very vividly where coming down the stretch and I was just learning to be in those situations and, you know, amped up, adrenaline pumping, I'd go after it, and then the thing would rope hook off the planet.
Well, and remember to get reduce spin off of the, you know, I'm talking, I played, you know, drivers in college in the early 90s that were 185 cc's probably, right? Like, and you had to hit sling and hooks to get spin off of it, right? So it was like a millimeter away from pure terror of an OB snap hook left, and it didn't take much if you were amped up or trying to go after one, right? Like, the timing had to be really good to hit a, you know, a 15-yard draw with it or a power draw, Oh God, man. Like, I don't have those fears at all anymore of standing over there with a driver. You know, and like a lot of us anymore, we just play a little fade. So you can just body release it as hard as you can. Just let it, you know, it still doesn't spin. So you can just hold it off and let it fade to the right 5 yards without that fear of it. You don't have to hook it anymore to get the spin off. That's a huge factor, at least in my mind.
The fact that you can hit these power cuts and like these low spinning fades is just unreal to me. I mean, man. It still blows my mind that it can be done.
I'm going to be like sitting there tonight when I'm ready to go to bed and thinking about the terror of a dog leg left with OB left, trying to rope hook a, you know, a driver that small to get some distance. And oh God, man, I'm with you. It was terrifying. The kids these days, right? Like, well, I sound like an old man. Like, they don't have any idea what it was like of how close it was to hitting a ball off the planet as a good player. Like, it did not take much.
I mean, as I said, I do this on a daily basis. It makes it feel so old, but it's, you know, I tell these kids, I mean, back in my day, you know, you had no idea what it was like, and you get them so easy. Because I mean that's mainly what I work with in person. It's like high school kids and college kids and stuff like that. And you know, I'm always kind of giving them crap. I was like, you know, back in the day, I'm hitting 5 irons in the green, and you're hitting wedges.
Yeah,
like, I'm this bitter guy about it.
5 iron from 175, like hit well.
Yeah.
You know, you go but grab.
It's real though. I mean, I think about like even my college days. I mean, I'm hitting a lot of 7 irons and stuff in the greens, and you know, I mean, and people wonder why, you know, we weren't shooting 20 under. In tournaments back then, I was like, look, man, it's a different game when you're, again, the ball's spinning much more. You're hitting 7 irons, 6 irons into greens. Like, you know, 200-yard par three was like,
that was,
man,
a beast.
Frightened over those things.
That was a 3-iron for me in college, right? That was a full Tommy Armour 845 3-iron, you know, to get that there. Oh, yeah, different beast, man. Yeah, well, keep telling the kids you guys don't have any idea what it used to be like, and you know that the wind would blow harder and it was colder and all the rest of the stuff too. I know you work on the mental side too, and you mentioned that with Scotty, and then you know what you're seeing, and I, you know, from talking to a bunch of friends of mine who play the tour and stuff like that as well. Like, I know it sounds like a cliche, but confidence builds confidence, right? And all of a sudden, when you start pulling off these big wins, and you know, you keep doing it and you find yourself in the position and you're succeeding. I always think it's two parts. A, you just, the anxiety goes down and you start believing in yourself. And then also two, he's getting a little bit, in my opinion, where the rest of the field knows he's not going to spit the bit. He knows he's not going to spit the bit. So they have to push, right? Because he's not coming back to the field. He's getting there, or he is there already with that. And that's a huge advantage. Like Tiger had it. You know, Duvall probably had that for that period of time when he was healthy. You get on these runs, and I think it also makes the other guys potentially make more mistakes as they know he's not going to shoot two over on the back. It's just not happening right now. And how do you assess his – do you think, like you were saying from the start, it's as much mental as it is how well he controls the golf swing?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's a lot talent-wise that sets players – apart out there, to be very honest. And this is conversations I've, you know, had with, you know, PGA Tour players and LPGA Tour players, and then the players trying to come up. I mean, look, it's very different if you're playing to, you know, keep your card, you know, keep your livelihood, to earn money for all the travel expenses. When you're sitting with millions and millions and millions of dollars and you've won a few times, like, or a bunch of times, it's a whole different world. You have nothing to lose.
You're free.
I mean, you're free. You have nothing to lose. I mean, the only thing he's got to lose at that point is maybe some critics talking a little trash about him, or just the pride of like, hey, I blew a tournament. But I mean, there's nothing really to lose. He's set financially. He's won a bunch. You know what I mean? So he's at a state mentally there that's just so different than a guy that needs to win to get, you know, maybe into the Masters, or a guy that, you know, needs to make the cut to like keep his livelihood, to actually earn money and pay expenses. Like, those are totally different mental spots to be in, but you can stand them right next to each other and they probably are going to do the same stuff. I don't know if there's a shot that Scotty can hit that nobody else can hit. I don't know if there's a putt that he can make that nobody else can make out there. But when you get to that level and you start doing that stuff, I mean, one, you start getting that stigma like, oh, you're really good. And you got to be strong mentally to uphold that too, right? Because you could easily be like, you know, well, man, everybody's put me on this pedestal. What if I don't keep up? But, you know, and if it's me, and this is just me saying, if I were there, I'd be like, dude, I got all the money in the world. Like, who cares? I'm going balls out here.
Yeah, there'd be a freedom to it, right? Versus, like I said, you want pressure. You know, I always, you know, watch the final round of Q School or something. You know, trying to get a card. That's pressure. There's pressure here, but you're correct. It's a different kind of pressure, right? I mean,
it's more of a pride at that point.
Yeah. And you should win. He's in position. Right. You don't want to be the guy who can't get over the finish line at that point. It's probably not going to change his life at all. He's already a major champion. Like I said, he's financially set. Where if a guy gets a PGA Tour card and $500,000 in his bank account to start the year off with, that's life-changing for some guy's career. You know. So it is a different – it's pressure, but it's a different way. Boy, he seems to be handling it, though, well. Or embracing greatness, maybe. Would that be a way to kind of say it? Like, he's comfortable winning.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a big piece of it, too, is self-image. It is a big piece to talk a lot about in the mental game is, you know, what do you believe about yourself? You know, do you believe that you are that good and meant to be that good? Or, you know, are you just waiting till you kind of mess up? And there's a lot of people there, again, with that amount of skill that can get into those situations and are just kind of waiting to, you know, for something to go wrong. You know, I'm not good enough to be in this situation. And that's a big, big differentiator. I mean, essentially the self-image is kind of what you're going to do. So like that player that, you know, will have a really good front nine and is sitting on the 10th tee going, oh, here I go again. I'm going to blow it. You know, I had a really good front nine, so the back nine's got to be crappy type thing.
Right.
Versus the one that's like, you know, can truly say, let's keep it going. And, you know, on the mental side, a lot of people will just be like, well, just, you know, it's another shot or something like that. But when those thoughts are kind of built in there like that, I mean, it's most likely going to come to fruition. It takes a lot of conditioning to change the self-image. And somebody like Scotty is probably pretty cocky. And knowing people who know him, he's pretty cocky. I mean, he's very humble and he's a man of faith and, you know, he has a lot of belief in that. But, I mean, he's also, like all greats are, like Tom Brady, like Michael Jordan. I mean, he's pretty damn cocky.
Right. It's you need know, to be.
You better have that. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You got to have that, right? I mean, I've never seen an incredible athlete of any sport that isn't just, like, going to tell you how good they are. And it's interesting because most people frown upon that. But it's like, look, I mean, there's that whole self-belief thing is really going to make the difference at that level because talent is really not separating many people at that level.
I agree. And the pros I know have been on tour for a long time are very successful. They are not lacking self-belief. I'll tell you that.
Right.
Right? And that's why they were out there forever, and that's why they've won multiple times, right? Like, they're not lacking self-belief. You know, they want that shot with on the 18th hole with all the pressure. They yearn for that. They want to be in that position, right? That's why they put the work in. That's why they've done they've done.
You can go down to the, you know, watch a Korn Ferry event, and you can watch every single player out there, and you're like, every one of these guys should be able to compete on the PGA Tour. You know, what's really separating them? And a lot of times it's the guys who are just missing or the girls are just missing by a shot or two, and it just crushes them.
Right.
And then it kind of constantly happens. You know, you might miss Q School by a shot or two, and then you're just crushed, and you miss a qualifier by a shot or two, where, you know, you might play it, you might get in, and then all of a sudden have a couple good finishes, and all that pressure's off, and then boom, you're going crazy.
Yeah. No, he's on an interesting run. Well, for us mere mortals not winning Masters, like I said, it's that time of the year. I know, like, you have an approach that you kind of have a holistic, and tell me if I'm explaining it wrong, but from the outside, like, you're doing like a 360 view of this from the mental side to short game to long game. Like, you're trying to make people play better on the golf course and shoot better scores. And how did you come up with the program? How do you, like, as a teaching professional, look at that? And, you know, I know you're reaching a lot of people, you know, outside of the Chattanooga area where you live. And, like, how did you come to doing what you're doing now and the experience that you have and trying to make it work from that standpoint than just focusing on, I mean, use a generic term, your swing plane?
Well, I mean, I'll be very honest. When I first started as a coach, I mean, that's what I did, and I went all in on it. It was just, you know, essentially making swings look good. I really enjoyed, like, the problem solving, like standing with their video and solving problems, and I thought that was the way it was. I mean, that's kind of what I knew growing up, and, you know, I mean, people would be happy in sessions, but then, you know, I kept kind of being like, well, hey, you know, how are you scoring on the course? And I wasn't hearing a lot of change, but I was like, hey, I'm hitting it better. I was like, okay, cool, but, you know, at the end of the day, aren't we supposed to be scoring better? And I remember sitting into a seminar when I was kind of a younger teacher, and I was talking with Todd Anderson. I'm not sure if you know who that is or not, but pretty renowned coach and very respected in the industry. And I remember him posing a question and just saying, like, look, if you were paid on the amount of shots that people dropped off their score, would you change your approach? And I was like, huh. You know, it's one of those questions that just really makes you, like, kind of think about the way you're doing things. And at some point you're kind of like, yeah, what am I doing? Like, if the goal is to get people to play better golf, I mean, at the end of the day, that's scoring better, right? I mean, there's still a handful of people that are like, hey, I just want to work on my swing and hit it better. You know, I'm scoring okay, but I was just not striking it like that great, and it's not as fun. But at the end of the day, I mean, everybody's trying to score better. Like, that's more fun, is to lower scores, to beat your personal best. And I'm like, okay, well, now I got to start looking at, like, what's essentially the easiest and fastest way to do it? Because essentially most amateur golfers, they don't have time to go out and practice every day. You know, if they have time, they want to essentially play golf if they can, or if they have limited time, then they're going to go to the range. I'm like, okay, so, like, what's the kind of path to do this? And essentially what I found, and some people still get upset with me when I say this, but I think players work on their swings way too much. And I think they work on stuff into a point where they essentially just confuse themselves, or it's unnecessary. And so I started looking at them like, okay, well, what if I can get players to work on their swing less, spend maybe 10 minutes a day on it, and then move on to things like that, like not three putting, like getting up and down a little more around the green, like getting more distance off the tee so they're hitting shorter clubs in there. Like, now we're starting to look at, okay, now we got these things. And again, what if they can just strategize the course a little better? You know, what if they're just on different sides of the tee box and that opens up all this room? Now they're not in bunkers, they're outside the fairway. You know, so I'm looking at all these things like, okay, what can people do? What can people do quickly? And what's going to get them there? And that's essentially how kind of my program and how I coach has come to fruition, because the same thing, even with the elite players that I'm coaching, I see them all the time just get stuck on the range and are sitting there for hours working on their swing and not accomplishing anything. And most time they just either wear themselves out or they just confuse themselves and end up getting them into a position to hit it bad. I mean, my friend Brady Riggs, who's a legendary coach too, said one time to me, he said, like, the range is where games go to die. And I don't know if I could agree with him anymore than that.
Well, I remember one time I was at a Champions Tour event, and this is, like, no dig on this player because he was really good for a long period of time. But I was watching Esteban Toledo, right? And he's hitting, like, the most beautiful, like, 5-irons with, like, a 2-foot apex draw. But the dude did it for, like, 45 minutes. And I'm like, what's the point? Like, dude, you're flushing it every single time. Like, I don't know, you know. Based on the club head speed that man has and on the Champions Tour, like, I don't know how you hit a 5-iron any better, right? It was perfect. Mm-hmm. It was and I'm thinking, man, if I hit five in a row like that, I would put the club down and go work on my short game and chipping and putting from 100 yards and in, because his swing looked really good, right? Like, okay, check. I think, like, David Duvall was famous for that, of, like, not overbeating golf balls. He only went there if he had to work on something. If not, he was not going to go out there and hit 7-irons to death.
Right.
You know? So there are some players that, like, seem to go to the range. There's some players that seem to just work on their golf game. But it's interesting that was his quote of, like, you think some guys can truly overdo the driving range and, I'm guessing, forget about the other parts of the game that helps you get the ball in the hole and score better.
Oh, I mean, I see it on a daily basis, right? So, I mean, I'm at a country club, so I'm seeing, you know, I get to witness a lot of times in my downtime, I just watch you know, I watch how the, I mean, our club is probably, our mean age is probably, I would say 45 to 60. That's probably the majority of the guys out there. And we're heavily male club, but so I watch these guys come in. I mean, and then I even talk to them too, just because I'm always curious to see what people are thinking of. And most people are going up there fresh off a YouTube tip, and they're trying to do something. And I'll even ask them, like, why? I just ask people why. Like, why are you doing that? How is that going to help? And nobody really can ever answer that. And I look at practice, like, any time I spend, and I'm especially at a stage in my life where I just have zero time to waste. Anytime I spend, like, I'm solving a problem. Like, I want to know what my feel is to hit this shot that I need to hit. You know, I would like to start the ball left and fade. If I can't do that, then I'm going to work on, you know, a swing drill to do that or a path drill to do that. And then from there, I want to solve, like, how am I thinking about that over the ball? Like, what's a simple feel I could have or a visual? Like, I need to know those things so I'm prepared when I go out there. That's all I'm doing is I'm preparing. So I go, if I do A, then B is going to happen. And most people are in there and kind of going through the Rolodex of swing thoughts. And, you know, I'll hear these guys and they'll talk to each other about it too. And, you know, one time they're like, well, this swing, I'm trying to get my weight over here. And the next swing, I'm trying to drop the club. And then I'm like, okay, so when you go to the first tee, what are you going to do?
Yeah, you better have that cleared out of your mind at that point. Maybe one swing thought, maybe one. That'd be about it. Otherwise, I'd like to just visual the ball flight of what I'm, how is it going right to left or right?
Yeah, but most people don't do that, right? I mean, most people have 10 different swing thoughts in practice. So I always say, like, most of the time players are training themselves to be inconsistent because they grow it out there and they work on different swing thoughts and they're training themselves to bounce around swing thoughts every couple swings. So they go up to the first tee, maybe they hit a good one, but as soon as that bad shot comes and then another bad shot comes, now and then it's like, what? Now what? So now now it starts to go down the Rolodex of swing thoughts, and that one doesn't work. Now they're just getting frustrated. And then everybody knows this one. Then they'll go back to the range, they'll hit it great.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But it's like they're never really just defining what is it that we do well. And when you really know that, like for me, I need 5 minutes, Jason. And I'm not saying I'm a great golfer anymore, but I know where I can get – I know I can get the ball flight moving – you know, where I need to. Like, I just need to check, like, is the club a little outside on the backswing so I can just cut across it a little, hit my fade. If I can't do that, I'm going to throw a stick out in the way. I'm going to do that for 5 minutes. As soon as I have that feel, I'm good.
Right.
Like, what else, why do I need to be out there the rest of the time? From there, I'm just making sure I'm rolling my ball straight off the putter face. I'm making sure, you know, I'm hitting my trajectories on my wedge shot. Once that stuff's prepared, like, where the magic is happening is on the course. So if I were really, you know, getting back into competition. I mean, I haven't competed in years and I play like twice a year at this point, but you know, if I were like, hey, I'm going to go play in a tournament, I really got to prepare. I mean, I would be spending 90% of my time on the course, like really just pinning down my thought processes. I'd be pinning down my alignment, you know, making sure my grip's staying in the good spot and just going through those things. Like, am I really controlling the ball flight? And do I have my mind in the right spot where I know exactly where my focus is over? Like you said, is that a visual? Is it a feel? Like, I need all that stuff defined. I need my yardages down, and I need to make sure I'm just making putts, essentially, and I'm good around the greens. If my yardages are good, I know my swing thoughts in the right spot to produce the ball flight, and I really feel in control of that. Like, you know, for example, I'll give you one. Like, for me, because I've always had a tendency to, like, kind of slide off the ball. Like, I always feel like my weight stays on my left foot. It doesn't, but when I feel anchored on my left foot, I hit it great. Like, I got that. I'm in control of that. I know if I do that, I'm going to hit good shots. So I just double-check that, you know, making sure that's producing my little cut swing, and then I'm good.
If you, when you're sitting here watching these guys playing, so, like, somebody listening to the podcast, give me two or three things at the start of the year that is like the easiest fixes that you've seen over the years. It works. You can, more than not, somebody might be doing this, especially being like, you know, we haven't touched it. You know, we're just starting to play. It's still cold here in Illinois. But a lot of the country, it's still, we're just barely kind of getting some rounds in us, right? And it's a lot of rust and, you know, you don't play a whole lot from, you know, middle of November to the middle of April. So you're knocking rust off. What do you see that can really, out of the gate, help people? If it's a mental tip, if it's short game, if it's long game, like what's a few things you would focus on out of the gate?
Grip, set, a pivot, for one.
All right, walk me through that.
Yeah, so, I mean, most issues are coming from just the grip and just where the setup is. Particularly, you know, if the feet are all crooked and, you know, if the weight's sitting too far back on the heels, which is very, very common in amateurs. So spine will be too upright, weight's back on the heels, you know, and then couple that with, like, a grip that's off. So many swing issues are coming from there. But yet everybody wants to advance to, you know, swing path, swing plane, and working on things that truly never change if we're not in a spot to truly be able to do that.
Before the golf swing even starts, we're saying, right? We're saying just setup. Really good athletic setup.
Yeah, I mean, 95% of stuff is coming from there.
Right.
I mean, like 95% of stuff. But people work so much on, you know, the swing portion before even getting to the root cause. So, like, for example, you know, if my feet are kind of flared and I'm sitting back on my heels, like, you pretty much just locked your whole body up. Like, you're not going to pivot very well. So now we're going to start to see sliding, and we're going to see probably over-the-top swings, or we're going to see a lot of sliding into the ball and dropping it too far under. And primarily just because you're not standing in a spot to truly let your body work and be able to move.
And then throw the golf hump in there a little bit too, when the spine angle has to pop up because can't rotate out of the way.
Well, yeah, I mean, so again, anytime your weight's on your heels, it's going to the toes.
Right.
Like, that's a good thing for people to know. Like, if your weight's sitting on your heels, you can't pivot off your heels. You can't jump off your heels. You have no power off your heels. So if you're standing on your heels, for the most part, your weight's going forward. So, yes, humping it, spine popping up.
Yep.
So that's either going to cause dropping it under or over the top, you know, depending on what the player's pattern is. But so step one, I mean, for most time, I'm just getting people into a setup and on the balls of the feet, getting light on the heels, and a grip in a spot where they can move it. But, you know, the grip feels awkward to change. Like, we all know that. But people just don't want to do it, man. Like, you know, the club face might be really jacked up and it'll be like, hey, let's slide the grip over a little. It's going to feel awkward for a while. But most people are just like, oh, it feels so weird. Now I can't hit it. But, I mean, if you really stick to a grip change for a day, it feels so much better because there's so much sensory in the fingertips that it feels so awkward at first. But, I mean, you take your hands off the club and you re-grip it, and you just do that over and over. I mean, after 20 minutes, it feels fine. It starts to feel normal. But it's like people just kind of mentally go.
Do you like those training grips that have the hands in the right? Okay. So that would be a great, if you're struggling, use those things, right?
100%. Yeah. Because, I mean, it's just like, to me, it's such a silly reason to hit bad shots is to have your hands in a bad position. You know what I mean?
Well, I see a lot of weak golf grips, especially with the left hand. And when explain to people listening, I don't mean weak of how firm you're holding onto it, but the V going over, if you're right-handed, like going over your left shoulder, club face way open. I see that like a very common, you know, sometimes not the right hand as much, but man, people naturally want to grip a golf club, especially if they're just starting off or a little higher handicap, that the hand is not, the left hand is not in a position, if you're a right-handed golfer, to kind of close that club face down and get some power on it.
Yeah, it's interesting. I see, like, a correlation, and this is just kind of my own stuff. I don't know if I have anything to back this up, but I see a correlation between age. I typically see the older the player, the weaker the grip. The younger the player, the stronger the grip.
Hmm.
Like, almost every kid I see under, like, 14 years old has a strong grip. Like, I never see a weak grip.
That's true.
As players get older and older, I see those hands start to fly over. So I typically see a lot of golfers 60 and above have the weaker grip and really rotate the face open.
Yeah. So we got grip. So we're trying to get – we got stance. We got to get the hands in the right position for this to work. And what's the third thing you were kind of saying? Hey, out of the gate, let's check some fundamentals here.
Yeah, so your pivot. So how you turn is basically controlling – everything. I mean, it controls where the club's going to swing. It controls, like, your, you know, the direction, the path, and it's going to control, do you have any space to the swing? So I look at it like probably the simplest way to think about a golf swing, like, if your arms have space, you're probably doing pretty good. Like, every swing fault, like, I've ever seen in my life has to do with when the trail arm kind of gets close to the body and either, again, goes away from the body back in, so, like, over the top. You know, they'll have to, like, throw it over and the arms pull back into the body. Or the right elbow gets stuck on the downswing and has to kind of flip around the body on the follow-through. So most issues are coming from the arms getting jammed up. Like, when you see players, like, you know, again, on that professional level, I mean, you're always seeing a lot of space from arms to body through impact. So I look at, like, when we can create a pivot and we can turn our lower body and stay centered for the most part, we can start to create our room for the arms to swing. So, for example, like, if a player slides, like, let's say they're a right-handed golfer and their hip slides out to the right in the backswing, it bends the spine towards the target. So if that happens, now the arms are automatically going to swing over the top just because of the direction the spine is. And then that's going to always going to pull the arms back into the body because you've essentially lost all your space.
Right, right.
I don't know if that makes sense to you or if you can visualize that.
I can, yes. But, yeah, that makes sense, right? And then, you know, and in that position, that's the only way to get, if that happens to the player of what you're saying, that's the only way they can kind of get the arms back in front of their body again.
Yeah, because your arms, like, your arms are always going to seek space. They're not going to physically run into your body on purpose. Like, they're going to try to go somewhere. So, like, a player that slides their hips in the downswing and essentially bends their spine back, so they're swinging, you know, too end out or too shallow, you know, they typically get their arms too stuck to the right side coming in, and then their arms have to flip around, which causes, you know, again, that closed space hook type thing. So in terms of the pivot, I'm trying to see, like, can especially we keep your sternum and belt buckle as close to the center as possible throughout the swing so you're controlling your spine? Because where your spine bends is where the club's going to go. If your spine stays relatively straight, like, you're going to have a relatively good path. If it bends away from the target, you're going to swing to inside out. If you bend it at the target, you're going to swing over the top. So, you know, again, I look at, you know, players that spend a lot of time working on their path, but they're not really controlling things that, you know, that are really controlling that.
Right.
And they're not working on the things that are really controlling.
A leads to B. If A is bad, then there's no, I don't care what you want to do with your path, it's not going to happen. Right. It's not going to look like Adam Scott's path where it slightly goes under it going down with right. If you just think of like a classic swinger, you know, in my mind, I want to be in that position. But if what you're describing of the tilt happens, that alone is enough to kill any relevance or anything being close, even though I'll never swing like Adam Scott, to have that same sort of, we can say the matching of the path up even or close to what Adam Scott does. Right? If A happens, I can't get there.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'll give you a good example. I had a guy that's probably mid-50s, we'll say, come for a session the other day. And, you know, he was kind of going, I asked him, you know, what he wanted to accomplish. And he was going down his Rolodex of essentially like tour swings that he wanted to mimic. He's like, I really want to shallow the club. I want to have the kind of Brooks Koepka or Dustin Johnson bow wrist at the top. And he was going through all these things. And
you better be athletic to get out of the way of that one.
Well, first I was like, why? Yeah, I mean, at first I was like, you know, why do you want to do that? It was always a little bit of a warning sign. And I just kind of said it, like, I didn't mean to be a dick about it, but I was kind of being a dick about it.
Yeah.
Like, so you just want to look better is what you're saying. And he was like, well, I guess. But, you know, he's like, he's been spending the last year working to shallow the club, and he was still very steep, and it was just kind of what I told you. He's like, I've worked on drills, I've done some lessons, and I still can't stop this over the top. But I mean, he was essentially, his posture was off. His hips were way back. He was very tilted, and then when he went back, he just had a lot of right hip push out, so it kind of bent that spine like we're talking about, and then he would just, from there, he had no choice to go that direction, to go over the top. And I just explained that to him. So we got him, you know, a little taller, got his hips over his heels a little more in setup, and I just helped him feel how to work his right hip in, created all this space, and then he was swinging the club way side, almost too much at that point. He started hooking the ball, and he's like, wow, you know, he's like, that was 15 minutes, and I haven't been able to do that in a year. That's crazy.
But
and
don't
just,
worry
you know,
about the
again,
John Rahm or the DJ move, right? There's, I mean, right, like some guys, and that, well, I'm just thinking, like, I'm probably going out on a tangent here, but you and I both know how athletic you have to have that club shut like that and still be able to hit a fade, a hard fade from that position. I can't get out of the way quick enough of it, right? My body doesn't move quick enough to hold that off.
Tough, man.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's a really athletic guy's golf swing, right? To be able to have it that bowed and then just be able to bring that back in front of you. Like, that would not be a golf swing for a 55-year-old amateur, I would say, let's go and try to work on this.
Yeah, I mean, and I just kind of tried to ask you. I was like, hey, you know, do you want to hook the ball? Like, because since the speed of your body, like, if you want, I mean, I can show you a close like that, but you're going to hook the hell out of it.
Right. That's what I'm saying. To hit a fade from that position really takes some athletic talent, right? And because those guys are hitting fades from that position, not hooks.
Yeah. I mean, if it makes anybody feel better, I mean, I've worked with a guy essentially on the mental game who was playing professionally and was trying to go to Q school, and an incredible player, but he had a swing coach that was trying to get him to do that. I mean, this is a professional athlete. I mean, he was the workout twice a day type guy, chiseled, and he was trying to learn how to hit that shut face cut, and I mean, he couldn't do it. Oh, he just could not do it.
Was he hitting it left, I'm guessing?
Yeah, he's a lefty.
Okay, but yeah, I mean, he was hitting hooks with it, unfortunately, I'm guessing.
Yeah. He hooked it and pushed it, and he just could not get that right. And it unfortunately cost him a little bit. But and that's the other point too. I'm like, at some point, like, you know, it's not mental, but at some point it is. I mean, in terms of getting into the mental side, it's like, look, if you're awesome on the range consistently day in and day out, then it's probably a mental thing.
Right.
If you can't hit it very well on the range, it's probably not a mental thing.
Right. There's something going on. So we got the grip, right? And then we got that part, and we're getting our posture more athletic. Is there one other, you know, we need to get some space, and we, you know, that you're talking about, is there one kind of simple drill that you would, you know, the people listening to, like, let's just, this is simple and it will give you space, and I'm telling you, it works. Is there one for that, like we got on the other ones?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I really like, I'll give you two versions of it, but both of them are meant to help players learn how to essentially turn and place better. The first one is if you take like a stick or a club and you put it parallel with your feet right between your stance. So essentially it would be like a ball position stick.
Yep.
Does that make sense?
Yep.
So it's going right between your stance, kind of parallel to your feet. And all you're going to do there is practice trying to turn back and keep the seams of your shirt or the seams of your pants essentially over top of that stick.
Okay.
Or your belt buckle is another way to look at it too.
Yep.
But what I like to kind of focus on that torso core area. So I'm like really turning that side, and I'm trying to get the seam of my shirt to be right over top of that stick. So if I slide, it's never going to get there.
Yes. Right.
So in a way to kind of visually do that, if you just hold a club right against your stomach, I hold it kind of against there with two hands. So it's essentially running parallel to your shoulders now.
Yep.
I'm just going to turn that to 90 degrees over that stick.
Yep.
So again, if we're sliding, you're never going to get that amount of turn.
If we're turning, you'll see a turn.
If you're turning, you'll see a turn. And then, like, for example, let's say I kind of move my whole body too far away from the target. Like, now you're going to see that your club is way, way away from the stick. You moved way over it.
Correct.
Or if you're like really leaning towards the target on the backswing, again, you're going to see it really crooked. So I just like to use that alignment stick to really try to turn over top of it on the backswing, turn over top of it on the follow through. So it really helps everything stay in a very centered manner. Now I realize not everyone's going to be able to stay perfectly centered, but it gives you a little feedback on it, which is important because most people have really good intentions of what they're trying to do, but they don't really have any feedback. So they might think they're doing something, but not be doing it.
Right.
And this is also another reason why a lot of players can go down rabbit holes on the range. Cause let's say they're working on a simple turn drill like that. Let's say we worked on staying centered, but they don't really know if they're doing it. And they try for 4 or 5 shots and they just hit awful. They might not be doing it, but right. They think they're doing it.
But that now visual will give you if you're doing it or not, right? I can picture from that drill, you're going to know.
Yeah, but I'm saying if you don't have that, though, this is what throws a lot of players off, and they think they're doing it right, but they're hitting it bad. Now they're linking, well, this doesn't work, so now I got to try something else. I mean, this is what happens to players on the range. Like, this doesn't work, you know what I mean? So it's hard for them to associate because they think they're doing the turn right, but they're not doing the turn right.
And what's the second drill you got?
So the second one is heels up. So essentially you're going to point your toes kind of straight away, lift your heels slightly off the ground, and then your goal is to essentially make golf swings staying balanced on the balls of the feet. So you can't fall over, You can't fall on your heels. You have to truly just turn back and turn through, keeping pressure on the balls of the feet. This is a that's a really good warm-up drill because it fires the legs up and gets the hips really moving. But essentially, you're going to players are going to really start to see very quickly, like, how much their you know lower body is moving around, whether it's heel to toe or side to side and things like that. So I really use that heels up drill with everybody I coach as either a warm-up drill or just a pure pivot drill, just to learn how to stay essentially balanced and turn in balance like that.
Yeah, because you can't fake that one.
Can't fake that one, but what's cool is a lot of players start really understanding how to push off the ground when they start getting more in tune to how to use the balls of the feet. Because that's really where we're pushing off of and getting pressure off of. So, like, if you're going to go and just jump as high as you can, the first thing you do is you get down on the balls of the feet.
Right.
If you're going to throw something, you land on the ball of the foot. Like, that's where the part of the foot where our pressure is really meant to be placed. And when we're on the ball of the foot, it actually unlocks the ankle, which helps the whole essentially system or body turn better. So you're going to players start to really feel like, holy cow, now my ankles and shins and everything kind of starts to unlock, and it frees up the body to turn.
Athletic. You're being an athlete then at that point.
Being an athlete. So most people that are struggling with turn are the people who are, again, are sitting back on their heels and their feet are kind of flared out. And even though, I mean, we've been told for years, like, flare your feet, it helps you turn, it actually doesn't. It just locks up your whole body. And people are doing weird stuff to kind of get out of the way, which is, like, just either leaning the hips back or swiveling the hips or something like that.
Gotcha. Well, it's great advice. You know, like I said, we're all going to be working on fundamentals at the start of the year. If somebody wants to work with you, what's the best place for them to reach out, find you? You know, I know you're doing some online stuff too. Like, what's the best way for people to reach in and what platforms?
Yeah, so I just launched, I'm kind of in a beta testing right now. So any of your listeners that want to join and kind of help me make this program awesome, but it's my 10X Better Golf program. And it's cool because I have all my online courses are built in there, but I have a real guided journey for players to come in. So when they sign up, they get access to this community and they can follow these steps to kind of know I've laid out, this is something I've refined for probably 15 years, but what we were talking about earlier is kind of helping players understand where they are in the journey to cut their handicap in half. I mean, that's my goal usually with everybody. I want to cut your handicap in half. So I want to show players when they come in, they can kind of find where they are in this journey or these milestones and say, okay, this is where I'm at in this. And then this is essentially what I need to be progressing on, whether that is how you're practicing, whether that is the swing stuff. I have essentially material courses in place for, you know, everything somebody needs in there. But it's not just like, here's 1,000 videos, go figure it out. It's very hyper-specific to where the player is on their journey and how to get them to cut that handicap or that score, you know, way down. And I have a community baked into it too, so I'm in there daily answering questions, and in the premium version of it, they can get onto my OnForm app and actually get personalized swing analysis and drills. So, you know, just like we were talking earlier, I really built this thing out I want somebody to be able to get in here and be able to follow a very easy journey to get better and to really cut their scores down. And everything that they need is in there based on where they are in the journey, whether that's putting, whether it's how to practice. I have a really, really awesome practice system that will simplify and clarify things for people. My 10X Better Swing program's in there, which is essentially, I call it the only three things, secrets to a, you know, wildly consistent swing, which is, again, we go through how to stand, how to grip it, you know, how to pivot. And then more importantly, I have what I call the swing decoder, which is helps people understand how to look at their swing and understand it, how to read ball flight, understand exactly what they need to do. But it's just getting players organized and going, here's my couple keys. Here's how I practice it. And here's how I advance it on the course.
Pro, the information was, you know, fantastic. And, you know, I can personally attest, you know, if you are listening to the podcast that, you know, Kyle will make you a better player. We trust him at sub 70. You know, it's if you work with him, he's a hell of a teacher, and you are a hell of a teacher. And we wouldn't ever have anybody on that we did not fully believe in their beliefs, and you're at the top of that list, because I know guys who have worked with you, and it's always one of those deals where it's like, does the player get better? And yes, the players who work with you get better. So anyone, you know, check out the stuff, and you will legitimately become a better golfer, you know, working with Kyle here. Is there a website again for an easy spot for them to start off with to find you?
Yeah. Well, I'm humbled, man. I appreciate you saying that.
Yeah, and by the way, you don't pay me to say this. Right. So there's no financial thing that you and I have together, anything like that. I mean, we care about our customers at sub 70, and, you know, hopefully we handle the club side, but we trust anybody working with you.
Well, you definitely do that. And I mean, I will say to anybody, I mean, I fully embrace, and I'm playing everything sub 70. And I tell everybody too, I mean, out of all of it, I don't know if it's what you guys like want me to know for, but your putters are insane. Like, I mean, I have, you know, a Scotty Cameron that I never thought I would put away, and I was just going to test yours out. And I mean, I've been to the Cameron for years, and within a day, I mean, it's unbelievable.
Thank you. Yes, the putter market for us is growing. It's we've carved out a nice little niche with that. But it's the same thing on your side with us, right? You know, we don't pay you to play the clubs either. So, you know, it's one of these things where, you know, hopefully people work with sub 70, and we're not trying to make this an infomercial, I think, but we really care about the clients and that the equipment works, and we know if one of our customers who listens to the podcast works with you, they're going to get the same of what we do on the golf club side. And I know how much you care about your students and how good and talented you are at what you do. So I, you know, I'm totally comfortable saying that. And you're, you know, if they work with you, they'll be better for it.
I appreciate that so much. In terms of the website, so to get to the beta membership right now, the website is membership.10xbettergolf.com. And depending on when you release this, it might be fully up on 10xbettergolf.com. But either way, they'll be able to find it in either one. But if they want to go directly to the beta, which is very special pricing, like for my first tier of it, it's only $9 a month. People can get access to all of my stuff, the journey, and then the premium is $37 a month. And this is all going to go up when the program's fully launched. So if anybody wants to get in that beta program at that pricing, I mean, they're grandfathered in for as long as they want to stay in there with me. I'd love to have anybody. I mean, the more people I can have, just kind of testing and giving feedback, just to make it the best program it can be. The goal, like I said, is truly to get people in there and be able to follow easy steps and just have somebody basically saying, like, here's what you do to get better and to lower your scores, instead of just bombarding people with, you know, huge libraries of videos and saying, go figure it out type thing. So
is there an email address if they're in the Chattanooga area and they want a personal lesson with you?
Yeah, man. It's Kyle, K-I-E-L, at 10xbettergolf.com.
Perfect. Okay. And they can reach out to you from that on that kind of stuff as well. Well, let's do it again. You know, there's always something on tour to talk about. And, you know, all of us in this crazy game are trying to get better. So, you know, there's always interesting topics to talk about, and, you know, I've always enjoyed the conversations with you. So thank you for coming on today, Pro. I greatly appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Same to you.